You're about to enjoy TryHards, courtesy of MTGCast.com. If you enjoy TryHards or anything else supplied by MTGCast, please make a donation. Whether it's recurring or one time, you can help offset the very real overhead of bringing you the best podcasts in magic every week. MTGCast at MTGCast.com.
It's kind of energized the group.
And if you want to do anything else, he might pay you a little bit extra.
People are going crazy about this.
Because I didn't have $1,200.
It would have had that crappy foiling process.
Play Design has their imprint all over this situation.
Oh, 5-5-4. Oh, geez. Gotta have it.
14-year-old me was just the happiest camper alive after that.
Oh, you brave soul. This is another episode of TryHards, and you're here for it. Hopefully, it'll be memorable for you. Not as memorable as Rich Hagan's singing voice over the weekend, but then again, who can compete with that? I'm Sean Seacrest, he's Brian Tibbetts, and he's Matt Hurley. Brian, what are you drinking as we get this episode of TryHards started?
I am drinking some of the zombie dust that has been left in my fridge, and I can't believe that I had any left. Thankfully, there's a few bottles lying around, so that's what I am having tonight. Hurley, what are you drinking in the home of the Hot Brown?
I'm drinking water. I have the legendary H3NB, that, you know, the horrible flu that's been going around, and I'm just getting over it. So, sorry, guys. I suck.
Hurley, still, since we've started this podcast, more hospitalizing illnesses than top eights at magic events. So that's
this
his
is true.
Calling card.
This is all true.
Here on
Hey, I don't actually go in the hospital. I just usually end up in a bed having IVs pumped into me.
I don't want to know where you're having that done if it's not in the hospital. Kidding. That's not something that we can talk about. Thank you for the first time. Thank you for the new HIPAA laws for not letting Hurley talk about that here on TryHards. For me, I've got a few things, even though it got warmer today here where I'm at, that I need to clear out of the fridge before I officially put winter in the rearview mirror. So the Schlafly's Oatmeal Stout this evening for me as we get this episode of TryHards underway. Brian, I know you didn't get to play Magic this week, but Galesburg, your home, actually hosted a big event. And you have not only that event that you were at to talk about, but also the relevance after we formerly had Stone on the show to talk about what is going to happen with your LGS. This all sort of came together over the weekend. How did things go?
First of all, the event was a great success. It was 38 players for a standard PPTQ. People came from all over. They were from Quincy. They came from Quad Cities. They came from other places in Iowa and Illinois. So it was a really, really good turnout. Everybody seemed to be having a great time. The shop, as we are told, has just kind of functioning hours right now, and the shop will continue to function according to those hours, which are less than what they were open for. But until they get something settled with kind of a full-time person to run that, I think that's kind of we're at the mercy of that. So we're trying to get down to as many drafts and many events as possible so they don't give us a reason, you know, to shut the doors and say, well, nobody showed up for this and that and the other, which is a tough kind of line to have. The event overall was great. My boy Eric Hoffman took the thing down. Eric is a great player. Recently celebrated a birthday. We went over and drafted with him and just had a ton of fun over at his place. So I was really, really happy to see a member of the Shark Tank, which is the group here in town, take down the tournament. And he qualified for an RPTQ. And what I find interesting, guys, is this RPTQ is Team Unified Standard. So Eric did all the work to get there, but he can now take two buddies with him who are going to get to play in an RPTQ kind of on the back of his good graces. It's kind of energized the group to say, wow, we got to get testing on, you know, standard unified. There's so many Grixis and red and blue and black decks running around. What's going to be these decks? Because, you know, you can't play one card that goes in one deck. You can't play in the other two. What's this going to look like? And so it's really kind of gotten everybody to come out of the woodwork saying, yeah, I'm in with that. Yeah, I want to help you guys get to the other level. So I think this was actually a really, really good design by Wizards on this kind of pro tour qualifying circuit to kind of do something like this. Are you in agreement, or do you think you should just get there on your own merits, or do you see this as a kind of a gesture of goodwill?
I think this is an opportunity to have some fun, and I know a few people in the group in the Shark Tank in Galesburg, and I'm going to make one suggestion. this may go over like a bag of ball bearings at this point. Eric Hoffman is a great player. He's not a good player. He's a great player. He needs to take Nash and put him on that team. And that name of Nash is not going to mean a lot to a lot of people, but I'm going to describe him in just a few words because you have this person in your local playgroup. He's the person who is innovative with strategies that aren't necessarily top of the metagame mind. And he will be the person in a unified format who will be very comfortable and will innovate something off the radar that isn't stealing cards from other decks. Brian, you can probably talk about who would make up a good threesome from that group at your LGS from your Shark Tank to go with Hoffman. But I think a guy, whether it's Nash or not, a guy with that sort of personality, a player with that personality who is comfortable innovating something off the radar with cards that aren't going to be stolen from other decks for a team unified and can come up with something powerful and be comfortable playing it. Those kinds of players are invaluable in this situation.
Yeah, it's absolutely right. And we do have players like that who test together a lot, especially with Standard. Bergman, Knowles, Nash. There's a big group. And on the back of the good graces of others, me, Danny Lim, Daniel Kidd, who are just loading cards left and right, you know, to try to make whatever happen. I think it's going to be a great team no matter who Eric decides to kind of pick, because I'm looking at him as team captain. So it's going to be a lot of fun. And the other thing is, some of the other Sharks are like, well, shoot, we all want to go. So somebody else get qualified. And so six can go. And I think that's kind of what everybody's looking at, too. So we're trying to scour the PBTQ schedule and see where else we can play.
I'm really glad that they did this style of team events, because it does really, I think it fosters the community, for one. I do think it has the capability to be played. You know, Magic players are Magic players. They're going to try to game the system as much as possible. At the same time, I also think it's probably driving up their attendance. Now, I think one of the unintended consequences of these recent like Standard bannings and stuff we've had, a lot of decks are Scarab God decks. Because of the Team Unified, you're going to be limiting your Scarab God decks, you know, to essentially one or two decks. It works out great because it does foster that innovation for this current Standard format.
Unintended consequences. That's a phrase you're going to hear later in this episode of Tryhards. Matt, you were on your back getting cool fluids pumped into you this week, so we'll give you a pass on MTG played. I got a chance to get down to the LGS and get into a draft on Friday night, a draft that I'm still slightly salty about. I was way more salty about it when I was drinking after the draft, then on Saturday, and my salt level has been cut in half and in half and in half each day beyond. I was able to draft a pretty good black-red deck. I really loved it. It was kind of a mid-range, some removal, some synergies to it. It felt powerful. I was probably four cards away from a very good to excellent deck. But here's what I was upset about. We started the draft with 9. Now, that is a legal draft number to do it with. But after 2 rounds, someone dropped. So that made the math wonky. At 6 points, 2-0, I got the double pair down for round 3. And then because of the math after that, I ended up playing the only winless person in the draft in round 4. And you know what happened from there. The winless person looked at me after the match and said, "That's the first time my decks worked all night."
Oh,
so of course,
God.
That was the situation I ended up with. Easy wins in round 1 and 2. Round 3, go to game 3 for the first time, mulligan to 4. Round 4, go to game 3, mulligan to 5. And when your opponent looks at you and goes, "It's the first time my decks worked all night," yeah, that's a bad feeling. So that's why I was a little bit salty about the draft. If you're drafting Rivals and Ixalan, it is not a big-time archetype, I don't think, but if you can put together the black-red deck, this is the second time I've drafted. I find it pretty powerful, and it's got some big plays that it can make as that game goes on. So that was fun for me. Hopefully you get an opportunity to draft. You'll enjoy it as well. That brings us up to what happened this week on the tournament scene. Guys, GP Memphis. Standard, back on the menu. 1,082 players saddled up their best Standard deck. At least that's what they thought they did. But with no recent metagame, this was actually a wide open field. In the end, Tyler Schroeder on Red Green Monsters knocked off Aaron Berich, one of my favorite players to watch play, who was on the Bug Snake Value deck. by the final of 2-0. But Matt, as we go into this, the top 32 was littered with everything. Now, Mono Red didn't make the top 8, but Red Green Monsters had 2 in the top 32. Bug Snake, Grixis Energy with 4. Mardu Vehicles with 1. Blue Black Control with 4. Grixis Control with 1. Mono Red with 5. Naya Monsters had 1. Black Green Aggro had 3. 4 Color Energy made an appearance, as did Blue White Cycling. Classic Jund Strategies. Yes, with the big dinosaur at the top. Abzan Tokens, I'm sure Brian was excited about that, was there. And even a white-black life gain deck. Okay, they called it Crested Sunmare, but it was a life gain deck that was trying to leverage all of those powerful synergies. With a standard metagame this open, Matt, are we looking at something that is this open because it hasn't gotten any attention lately? Or is this finally a standard that has some of the feel that, quote, old modern had, where you could literally play anything?
I think it's a combination. There's a lot of people that are writing articles trying to go deep. Unequivocally, I think the best cards in Standard are Scarab God, Glorybringer, Hazoretz, and the four drop.
Rekindling Phoenix?
Yeah, Rekindling Phoenix. I think those are your four key pillars of the whole format right now. As you can see, I named about three red cards. So red is very powerful in the current Standard format, and not just quick, you know, attack it all in red. I'm glad to see that there's a lot of these kind of token strategies. Hey, look, Play Design did a great thing by banning Rampaging Frost down ahead of time, because can you imagine how bad that would have been with Rampaging Frost down in the format, how red would have been in there. This is a great format. It's a wide open format. The bug deck, that looks like a ton of fun. I'm glad to see the counters back. J.D. and Comparens wrote about a week and a half ago about, I think she called it Snakes and Ladders, and it has Hadana's Climb in it. Those decks did fairly well in the tournament. When you're using a card like Hadana's Climb, you just look at it and you're like, wow, you know, yeah, it's a very open format, but you still have your very, very, very powerful cards, and one of them is Scarab God, and the other one really is Glorybringer, and that third is Hazoret. So I just hope that this continues to happen the rest of the summer, and then after rotation, I hope Dominaria kind of shakes it up.
Brian, whether you agree with Matt's assessment or not, I think most people would argue that threats are better than answers in this format. Every card that Matt named was a creature and a threat. There's no Planeswalker, there's no removal, there's no card advantage spell that has been mentioned in that group of the best things in Standard. Search for Iskanta would probably make my top five, but it's a fifth by a long shot, most likely. Are we in a format where it's literally better to be threats than answers?
Yeah, I think that's just the reality, unfortunately, and we saw that this weekend. I mean, most of these decks have just a ton of creatures. You've got a couple of the blue-white discard or the blue-white cycling decks that really don't play any creatures, but they're cranking out creatures, which kind of leads into this whole thing of threats, right? We are getting creatures on the board and attacking for a bajillion and taking care of your threats with casts outs and fumigates and things like that. Threats seem to be the way to go. And if you look at that top eight list, there's a lot of synergy going on in the Grixis lists. But man, that green-red monsters, I think the thing that put Schroeder over the top was the fact that he just kept putting creatures on the board. And after a while, his opponent's hands looked ridiculous because he had no answers for the continuous parade of threats coming out. This is not a standard that I'm 100% behind. If I'm speaking honestly, I like when there's different things that you can do, when there's different decks out there that don't focus necessarily only on threats. So I'm hoping that there's going to be some kind of control deck coming up. I know they're there. The cards in Standard are good enough to kind of fight against the heavy creature decks. Somebody's going to have to get on the ball and brew something up. Maybe it's going to be me. I don't know. But I must say, though, Grand Prix Memphis was a ton of fun to watch. All the interactions, because, you know, there's that part of every Magic player that just seeing creatures bash into each other and taking huge chunks of life out of the other player. That's a lot of fun. And Wizards, I thought, did a fantastic job of being able to pivot quickly when matches got over and going to different matches and going to Time Walk matches and putting more Magic on the screen as opposed to just cutting to commercial after commercial.
Yeah, Rich Hagan and the crew did a great job again this weekend. If I have to pick one of these decks from the top 32, guys, I really like Aaron Berridge's runner-up list. that black, blue, green. Yes, it's a Constrictor deck, but Constrictor is there as the flavor augmenter. He was able to, in my mind, spiritually become the successor to the old Rug Energy deck, whereas all of his creatures, all of his threats give him value when they come in other than Constrictor. And if Constrictor ever gets to you untap with it, well, you're just so far ahead that it doesn't really matter. That's the deck that I would really look at going forward. Matt, real quick, if you were looking at what did well in Memphis, is there an archetype that you go, yeah, I really want to look at that?
You know, there's not an archetype, but I will say there's a card, and that card really is like that. The Hedonis Climb is the one that I see that's like, that looks really good.
Talk to me, Goose.
Exactly. If we're talking archetypes, though, I think the one archetype that has not been fully explored is kind of a reanimator with the black-green legendary enchantment that flips and lets you get back creatures from your graveyard. Somewhere there's a deck out there somewhere.
All right, we'll be looking at you to put the Eternalize enchantment on your Brontodon, then sacrifice it and start bringing things back.
There's a lot of Brontodons. Did you notice that?
Yeah, well, Brontodon's it's in a great spot on the curve. It's on a great spot on the threat list, and it can be answered by a few cards, but none that are popular in Constructed. You know, if you looked at what answers it cleanly for a mana advantage, there are very few cards in Constructed that are played that do that. So I think Brontodon's in a great spot. Brian, if you're looking at an archetype from this weekend that gets you excited, was there one that you saw?
Oh, that Sultai Constrictor list of Barich was just fantastic. Anytime you can have Constrictor and Ballista on the battlefield at the same time, and then if you have a Glintsleeve Siphoner to go with it, in my mind, that's just, you know, you're living the dream right there. I really like that. I love the Bristling Hydra in the list. I love the Hedonis Climb in the list. The Blossoming Defense, the Vraska's Contempt. I thought it did really, really great stuff. And then to top out on Verdurous Gearhulk, I mean, that just seems unbelievably synergistic. The problem was when that synergy was broken up, there was a timely Magma Spray in game two of the finals where he Magma Sprayed the Constrictor. And he wasn't able to play his Walking Ballista with extra counters on it. The game was over right then. I think, you know, the coverage team kind of called it as that point, too. I'm curious, though, guys, back to what I was saying earlier about maybe control decks coming. Every match I saw, I kept thinking, God, an Hour of Devastation would just wipe this board clean. Jeez, an Hour of Devastation would be great. So I'm thinking of, like, is there room for, like, a blue-red control kind of back from 6-8 months ago? That seems like an archetype with Torrential Gearhulk, Hour of Devastation, that could do some serious work in this current standard metagame.
I do think there's probably room for one. I mean, you know, you were talking about Hedonis Climb earlier. If a card like Hedonis Climb can be written about, and yes, people have been testing it, written about, and then somebody can modify the deck, take it, and take second, I absolutely think there's a blue-red control deck out there, especially with Chandra.
Here's what I think the problem is with Hour of Devastation, is that you have to play it in blue-red in the shell that you mentioned, Brian. You have to play it with something like Champion of Wits and then into Gearhulk in order to get that value, because you can't play Planeswalkers with Hour of Devastation. Yeah, you can play Bolas, I'm aware of the text, but you're not playing him before it comes down. You want to play a Planeswalker, keep the board clear, have him survive, untap, play your Sweeper. That's where Fumigate is great, but Hour of Devastation isn't, because it's likely not going to leave your Planeswalker around. So I think that you're actually limited to the blue-red shell if you're going to look at Hour of Devastation. I think maybe that's why it hasn't taken off, because the card advantage, board advantage presence of the Planeswalker typically is what you want with a Sweeper like that.
That's true. Like I said, as we move forward, if people start swinging to that, you know, the blue-red opens itself up to a lot of aggro-style decks and things of that nature. So it'll be interesting to see what people do. Those mid-rangey Grixis control, blue-black control decks could just be clogging things up for a while, and I think that's what's going to allow those red-green monster and kind of outlier decks to kind of, you know, rise up and take the top spot.
You talk about control. I think blue-black is in a great spot, but I think it needs a little bit of help. And I think the metagame's trying to figure out, is that red, is that green, is that white, and how much does it need? I think when a control mage figures that out, you may see them really break out and have some big results in this format. GP Memphis, it's a whole lot of fun to see standard cards front and center once again. Lightning Pole as we get away from GP Memphis. Brian, I'll start with you. Quick yes or no. Model Red, zero decks in the top eight. Statistical hiccup or a change in the metagame?
I'm going to say statistical hiccup for this weekend. I'd like one more weekend, and I'll give a more definite answer.
Hurley, same question.
Hiccup.
Hiccup, says Hurley. All right, somebody grab him and give him the Heimlich maneuver. And if you want to do anything else, he might pay you a little bit extra. That's everything as we walk out of Memphis this weekend and head toward this weekend's two big tournaments. Moto Champs is this weekend. Have you guys seen this field? This is like a field from my nightmare. I got a quick story. I've been doing play-by-play for college basketball team, and as the team gets dressed in the locker room, the coaches get together and play horse to entertain themselves. They constantly try to get me down there to play horse with them, and I always say no. And it's not because I don't like basketball. I do. I love playing horse and having a couple beers with my buddies, but I also don't like embarrassing myself. And there's no way you're going to get this old man out with a bunch of assistant coaches in their 20s who were just playing at a high level within the last 2 to 3 years to play horse. So I always say no and then set up my equipment very slowly in order to make it look like I actually had a reason. The reason I bring that up is I feel the same way about trying to play magic against this field for the Moto Champs. This field is absolutely loaded, and I actually don't think I'd want to embarrass myself by getting in on this field, Matt. This field, amazing, and I think Wizards has a chance to draw a little bit more attention to what they're doing online. Yes, this is your open drawbridge to rant about Moto, whether or not it would be better to have this in Arena or so forth, because this is going to be the most viewed online event hosted by Wizards likely this year.
You're right, Sean. Insane. I'm going to reserve my judgment until afterwards, but I hope that they do some fanfare for it, I guess would be the best way to put it. And I hope that they really play it up and they say, okay, hey guys, this is what's playing Magic Online is all about. This is another way to play Magic Online. And I also really hope they have some blowout special during it about, you know, some major announcement about like Arena or major announcement about, you know, somebody. The other thing is I hope they talk about the players as much as they can. I mean, just having the little bios by a lot of these guys. I know most of these guys on this list, obviously they're pros, but there's some of these guys that I'm not that familiar with. I want to learn more about these people that are playing.
Brian, whether it's Wizards hosting the Moto Championships, whether it's the VSL, the Vintage Super League, which is so well done, but it uses the host of Moto as the opportunity to play and showcase Magic. Is this how Wizards wants to be showcasing its product going forward? And is this going to speak well to the community based on what people see?
At this point, I think it's kind of a you have to, right? I mean, Moto is their flagship online presence. And if you don't have a championships, you know, people are going to be kind of wondering what happened. Whether it's the best way to showcase the product, no, I absolutely don't think it is. I still think that tuning in and watching a match with the benefits that Magic has done with the coverage teams and kind of ramping up in the talent of their coverage staff, I think that's where the strength is. But we have to see this. I mean, we've got to see how this goes. There's a lot of people who spend tons of time on Moto just to prepare for paper tournaments. We kind of have to acknowledge the fact that Moto has a place in our favorite game. It's not my favorite thing to do, and at the same time, I understand how essential it is to the game at this stage and moving forward for a long time coming.
You know what would be interesting to see? If they made each of those Moto competitors pick out a challenge deck and then let them loose in paper Magic.
Oh, that'd be so fun.
What do you think would be the most picked deck? Magic made huge waves this past week by announcing Challenger decks. They're going to be available April 6th, and they are going to be complete playable standard decks right out of the box. Many are guessing the MSRP will be $29.99 or $29.95, even though on the Wizards website, it still has the triple question mark next to MSRP. Chaz Andres on Star City Games did a quick rundown, and I'm stealing this from him Thank you, Chaz, for saving me an hour's worth of work by posting this already.
Yes.
When he went through each deck and listed the, quote, financially relevant cards. Hurley, you play the most Modo of anyone here, so I'll let you lead off, even though we're not really talking about Modo at this point. I needed a quick segment, and that's all that came to me. Counter Surge is the financially relevant cards. This is the Glint Sleeve Siphoner, Verdurous Gear Hulk, Walking Ballista, Fatal Push, Aether Hub, Rishkar, Lifecrafters, Bestiary, Scrap Heaps, Grounder. The only mistake they made here in my mind was including Hour of Glory instead of Vraska's Contempt. But okay, you're still getting $70.25 worth of value if you pick up Counter Surge. I'm not going to go through every card in each list, but Vehicle Rush is worth right now in the secondary market $86.75. Hazoret Aggro $82.75. And Second Sun Control $90.25. So Matt, this begs the question, if LGSs and big box stores alike get these challenger decks, will Wizards actually be served by what they're doing if hoarding starts to begin? Or does that become counterproductive to WotC's goals based on how much value is in the deck versus the sticker price?
Prevailing theory on this as well, and semi-confirmed this, is that these will only be available at LGSs. You're ordering these four at a time, essentially, so you get four of each deck. So you get 16 total decks. I don't think any of these are going to be stuck on the shelf. I think I've said this before. If I want to go down and play FNM, I can get all these I would consider tier 1.5. Get a tier 1.5, say, hey, give me $30 for a standard deck. People are going crazy about this. Financially, it's going to drive the prices of standard down quite a bit. The only issue with these decks are that they do come out in April, and then less than 6 months later, all the expensive cards in here actually rotate out. The fear is that the LGS is going to order a lot of these, and then they're just going to sit and rot after September rolls around. I would be worried if they're releasing these at the beginning of the standard rotation, but the price of standard is always already going to be dipping at this point. All these cards are going to be dipping. And so because of that, I'm not worried financially much at all. But it will mean that your Chandras, you know, they're not going to be $30 Chandras anymore. LGSs are a little, from what I'm understanding, are a little hesitant. But generally, everyone's super happy about this. And it was kind of like, why didn't they do this before?
Brian, the first thing that jumps out at me is that while many of the staples in these decks will rotate come fall for standard, Wizards did a very good job of including at least modern playable, and in some cases, legacy playable cards in each deck. Counter Surge gives you Fatal Push and Aether Hub and Walking Ballista. Vehicle Rush gives you the Fast Lands that are currently in standard right now. Hazoret Aggro gives you the Chandra Torch of Defiance, plus a Braid. Okay, you might say, well, it was available as an FNM promo and so forth. Second Sun Control gives you Field of Ruin, plus some options with Sensor, not the most expensive card ever. Settle the Wreckage is going to be in there as well. Each of these decks has at least playable modern to legacy cards in it, which seems to mitigate some of that loss that you may see at rotation.
Oh, absolutely. I think that's definitely the long-term benefit of the Challenger decks. When I started looking at kind of the inclusion here, and a lot of times in the pre-con decks that have come out in the past, you might get kind of a one-of bomb or something. But, you know, for Counter Surge, you've got four Glintsleeve Siphoners, three Verdurous Gear Hulk. Right there, I mean, you're talking $35 worth of cards right there. There's only one Walking Ballista in there, but God, that's a, you know, north of $10 card. It's crazy. I'm really excited to see kind of what, you know, this does for kind of just getting cards out onto the market. We might take a hit on, you know, collection price, but as I've often argued, you know, Wizards has never promised us that our value of our collection is always going to stay stable. This is just a way to get the great decks and great cards into the hands of the players, and they're going to be played for years to come in some format. You know, some we haven't even thought about. So, yeah, I really, really like that idea of the modern and legacy playables being included in this. I mean, not at a high rate. To me, it kind of mitigates the issue that Hurley was talking about of them just being standard cards that are going to rotate quickly. I think they put enough in here to make people a little less gun shy about purchasing them.
I do want to mention one other thing here, too. You mentioned it. You touched on it, Brian. Did you guys notice there was no banned cards in here? So that's telling me that these decks are probably going to be a regular thing now, which I'm 100% okay with. I would love to see people say, what's this Magic thing? I want to learn to play, pay $30 and get a semi-competitive deck. This tells me they're able to shift much quicker now, and I think that's play design too. So I think we're looking for nothing but the games going upward from here. We've had our bumps in the road, and once September hits and everything is back to, you know, where normal would be, I think we're going to have a great, great just season for the next 3 or 4 years where play design is just going to have a lot of say in everything they do.
Well, Matt, I think you're absolutely right. This, to me, is the first visibly positive referendum on what play design has put into Wizards' process by developing these decks with this value and spreading it out in the way that it's happened. I think play design has their imprint all over this situation, and the community, the game, the retailers, everyone is going to be happy because of it. Challenger decks going to be available April 6th. Check them out at your LGS. Guys, there's a whole different situation that's going to unfold in about the same timeline as the Challenger decks, and that is the Masters 25 release. I'm considering this Wizards' birthday present to me personally, based on when this timeline gets rolled out. So thank you, Wizards. I appreciate this chance at nostalgia and this chance at what looks to be an amazing set. I mean, we're bordering right now on cube awesomeness. Brian, so far as we know, about 22, 23, depending on what list you look at, previews have come out for Masters 25. What's got your juices flowing so far?
Oh, God, there's so much in this that I'm just all aflutter. And even since we started tonight, they've spoiled Vindicate.
Oh, what?
Just how I ended the show last week, Sean, with that whole idea of Vindication on the blue-green Pummeler deck. Yeah, Vindicate's going to be in Masters 25. Talk about a card that I'm just like, yep, that's going with me. Even to Dark Ritual. I mean, in a draft format, Dark Ritual is so good. To get that card out, I think is going to be awesome. I got to say, you know, Chalice of the Void being reprinted is great. Imperial Recruiter has to be at the top of my list, though. To even dream that I could possibly play Imperial Painter in Legacy, I'm just so happy because I didn't have $1,200. I know that's shocking. I didn't have $1,200 to go out and bone up for that for a Legacy deck. I'm really, really excited to see that what this reprint might do for that. And to see if that might become an archetype in the future.
I'm looking at these cards, and just based on art alone, I am rarely excited for reprints or new versions. But the clean way that they have executed some of the art and text boxes, along with the little extras, have me excited. Dark Ritual, with the art, the clean text box, and the magic M that we usually see on the back of the card for Magic the Gathering, I'm going to need those to replace the rituals currently in Pox. Blood Moon is a card that I love. The clean box, the original art, the templating, and the crescent moon in the text box. Again, that is an art upgrade, and I rarely say that about reprints. Now, they were smart enough to go with some great Legacy art in Chalice of the Void and not changing it, but this is the card that intrigues me the most. Living Wish has been spoiled as in. If they put the whole Wish cycle in, that's a cycle that's needed a reprint for quite some time. So I'm interested to see if they follow through with that. Hurley, what's got you excited from Masters 25?
The watermarks. Red Blast, Blue Blast are freaking sweet.
Oh, those are the art on those is beautiful, aren't they?
I may.
Those foils are going to be hot.
I've always said you're going to have to pry my Red Blast and Blue Blast out of my cold, dead hands. Well, the day may have come because I'm going to see what that art looks like. No, that art is just killer. Prosh for the first time in foil is going to be freaking sweet because otherwise it would have been in that commander set. Since it was in that commander set, it would have had that crappy foiling process. They did say this was going to be your standard foiling process. Now, with their reduction in card stock, you know how they've gone really down on like the physical quality of the cards lately. Hopefully that's been returned. The Hannah Ships Navigator, that one looks sweet. There's just so many cards in here. I'm super excited about this. I mean, even something as common as Pillage. Pillage and Popper, too.
Oh, Pillage is the card that I am most excited about for nostalgia purposes. And in case I did a bad job of describing it earlier, the cool thing about the watermarks in the text boxes is that they are the watermarks of the symbol of the original set that these cards appeared in. And that is just going to be so cool from an artistic standpoint, from a Vorthos standpoint, and from a heritage of the game standpoint. I think that is going to be an amazing mark and something that they obviously thought through and were inspired by for Masters 25. I can't wait to get my hands on that set. That brings us up to this week's In the Elevator. Matt's got something that is going to be right at home with Masters 25. Matt, what are you about to discard?
Balduvian Horde promos. Foil Judge promo from way, way, way back in the day. And it's the only old border Balduvian Horde, and it's like $2.50, $3. There's not a lot of them out there. I was looking around when it was spoiled at Common, because now it's Pauper legal. Is it powerful enough to be in Pauper? I'm not sure, but I think it might spawn some new archetypes. Throw a couple in your cart, because this is going to be a rare foil. Balduvian Horde Judge foil.
Balduvian Horde in this week's In the Elevator. You made my nostalgia feel so good right now. Brian, since we're talking about nostalgia with Magic 25, I will give you the soapbox for as long as you need it. We were both playing when Balduvian Horde was the $25 to $30 chase rare, and we both would go down to Aaron's and go, I don't know. I don't know.
Like, oh, that's really powerful. A 5/5 for four.
Yeah.
Oh, a 5/5 for four. Oh, geez. Gotta have it. Well, if I remember right, John, it was between, like, for you, it was like, you know, Balduvian Horde. For me, it was like, boy, that Helm of Obedience looks really, really sweet. I remember just kind of drooling at the case when those two cards were in there at the same time. So kudos, Alliances, for making, you know, this fanboy finally realized that spending money on Magic cards was an okay thing to do.
You want to talk about an era to remember? Jester's Cap was also the top of the financial want list. Balduvian Horde seemed good to me because I just wanted to play it on turn four before I played Veteran Bodyguard on turn five. That's all I wanted to do.
Oh, no, you want to curve right into Shivan Dragon. That's just what you wanted.
Well, and then into Shivan Dragon on six. Yeah, you're right. Yeah. That's
who wasn't curving into Shivan Dragon?
That's the way the game was played. I wasn't smart enough to realize that Sarah Angel was a good card at that point.
If I've never told the story on cast, I'll tell it right now. I won and it's on my DCI record. I took top eight or top 16 of it was a sealed tournament down there right around Revised Time in St. Louis at the old Gathering Ground, if you guys remember that doozy.
Oh, yeah.
For my place, I got eight packs of beta, I believe it was. Six packs of beta, something like that. And, of course, you know, 14-year-old me was just the happiest camper alive after that. I open it up, and I see a Black Lotus staring back at me. And I'm like, oh, sweet, I need Shivan Dragon. So I traded that Black Lotus that was fresh from the pack for four beta Shivan Dragons. And
oh, boy.
That's my story right there, because Shivan Dragon was worth about that at the time, because it was really hard to get a Shivan Dragon.
Well, you know, Shivan Dragon wins the game in your defense. Black Lotus just enables you to win the game. So as a game-ending play, Matt, I think maybe you were on you were ahead of your time there.
Or way behind my time, I'm not sure.
Yeah, one of the two. We'll figure out. It may be just hallucinations as you're coming off that 104.2 degree fever this week. So we'll give
not
you a pass on this episode of Try Hards. That brings us up to this week's 3 minutes to brew. You want to get aggressive? You want to disrupt your opponent? I think Dr. Tibbetts has a prescription for you.
This is a card that obviously I knew about when it came out, but the more I've been staring at it as I'm just kind of laying things out on Magic Central here in the basement, this is a card that has really caught my attention, and I think it's got so many different good qualities across so many different formats. Admiral's Order from Rivals of Ixalan. Two blue and a colorless counter target spell. The text on the box is, with the raid mechanic, if you attacked with a creature this turn, you may pay one blue rather than pay this spell's mana cost. So potentially countering a spell for a single blue seems like an absolutely bonkers way to go. So guys, you know me, I love my blue-red Delver in Legacy. I'm not advocating that I'm going to pull all four of my dazes and include this in there, but I still think there's all kinds of brew space for this card. Where do you think Admiral's Order is going to be? Sean, I'm going to start with you this week. Admiral's Order, 3 minutes to brew.
I think if you want to talk about Legacy, to me, this replaces Spell Pierce in that deck. because it is an unconditional answer when you want to be aggressive. And Blue Red Delver wants to be aggressive under all circumstances. You can still run days so that you can have a response to an opponent's devastating play. Obviously, you're still running some number of Force of Will, but I like Admiral's Order as a replacement for Spell Pierce, maybe even Negate, depending on what your game plan is against other decks. In Standard, anything that gets aggressive. There's a Blue-White Flyers deck, I think, that can be had. If you look at the indestructibility of Odonto Vanguard, plus some of the One with the Wind strategies, you're getting aggressive. The chance to answer whether it's a Vraska's Contempt or a Settle the Wreckage for one blue mana while you stay aggressive. I think this is going to be at home, obviously, in aggressive decks, but aggressive decks that specifically want to abuse one and two drops so that they can respond earlier in the curve.
I don't agree with Sean on this. You're looking at a cancel with limited upside. I don't think it has really any place in any of the Eternal formats. Maybe it does. I could be wrong, but I don't think so. In Standard and semi-aggressive deck, I think you're looking at playing, you know, attacking in with your creatures and then playing or using this to protect your creature from Essence Scatter or, you know, any other counterspell they may be running. If you're playing this, it's definitely maybe a two of in the main and like two in the side type of thing. You're not running anything, I think, over a four drop or something like that, because you do need to maintain this. I don't know. I think if there's a pirate deck, I think this goes in a pirate deck. I just don't think there's enough support in kind of the Grixis pirate decks right now. The reason I say there's not enough support is I just think that there's other cards in Standard that are just too good.
I like both of what you said about this, and I think there's definitely some downside to this because you're not guaranteed to attack even with the most aggressive decks. So the benefit of this card is very, very high. So Hurley, I'm not going to come down quite as harsh as you did. Where I first went to this when I saw the card and was kind of continuing to think about it was in the Modern Humans deck that's running 30 plus creatures. Blue is not a problem for that deck. So I think Admiral's Order is a fantastic addition in sideboards for that deck to protect, you know, creatures, to protect from board wipes, to protect from all kinds of things on Raid. For Legacy, and we're talking the difference between losing a game and winning a game, I think Admiral's Order does deserve a place in the conversation. I agree with Sean, as a replacement for Spell Pierce in the late game, a hard counter as opposed to a conditional counter, I think, is definitely worth it going a couple in the sideboard.
Admiral's Order, this week's 3 Minutes to Brew, here on Tryhards. You don't have to be Jean-Luc Picard to know that sometimes the Admiral gets it right. That brings us up to what we did to get better at Magic this week. Matt, what'd you do while you were lying around with your IV to get better at Magic?
I watched a whole bunch of Magic, so that was actually a ton of fun to do that. Really, it was just watching a lot of Magic and kind of relaxing. I haven't had a serious Magic night in quite a while. I haven't hit up FNM in a while. I've got a friend coming in town this weekend, so actually my next serious Magic tournament's going to be when we meet up for the meetup in St. Louis in a couple weeks. That's coming up real quick. I'm actually getting my deck together this week, and I was formulating some changes to my deck I'm playing for Legacy. That's really what I did to get better. I was just goldfishing that deck out a little bit and formulating changes, and I'm going to try and shake the rust off this week as well.
Yeah, what I did to get better at Magic was ask Brian what our travel plans are for St. Louis. I didn't get a response, so I guess I didn't get any better at Magic. Brian, what'd you do to get better at Magic this week?
Still trying to figure out some travel plans because I'm still waiting on the people who are going with us to get back with me about things. As we know, these things are always up in the air, and Magic players are notoriously late on, you know, making plans. So if we can get those extra hours of sleep going down the night before, I'm all for it. The thing I did to get better, went down to the shop yesterday, as I said before, and kind of cheered on the Shark Tank. Had to go down a couple times, actually. Had to go to a meeting, went back down, did a little trading when I was down there. So it was all in all a good day. Got to see some really, really good decks. Got to see some really, really tight play. A lot of fun. And in some ways, it's really fun to just be down there and kind of talk to guys between rounds and ask them about plays and, you know, hey, what'd you think about if you would have done this? Yeah, I did probably 50-50, sure. Things of that nature. So that was good. The other thing I did was I finally solidified my main 60 for the Legacy tournament in St. Louis. I spent a little bit of time yesterday just kind of going over, getting the right balance of creatures and spells, I think, for the deck. So I was really, really happy about doing that. I just have to work on the sideboard a little bit, which is always a lot of fun and things I like to get input from people on starting off with, you know, a good 20 cards, 25 cards, and say, hey, pick 15. What do you think? Make your argument and, you know, go from there.
Oh, you brave soul. May your admiral's order never be denied. Thank you for joining us for this week's episode of Tryhards. We'll see you next week as we get ready for St. Louis Legacy here on Tryhards.